Got a Bible? You got your Bible open? And are you semi-ready? The book of Esther. Do you remember that in chapter 3, just in case you have forgotten, Mordecai, in his position, would not bow down to Haman. Haman, the, what will we call him, prime minister of the land. And remember, he was this very insecure man, obviously. Hated the Jews. One of the descendants of the Amalekites, an Agagite. Remember, he was the king of the Amalekites. So we've got a problem on our hands. And the decree went forth, I think you remember, to kill all the Jews. And I'm sure you remember the day, too. What day was it of the month? Good. The 13th day of the last month of the year. Remember that? That they rolled the dice, and that's what it came to. So that's when all the Jews are going to be killed. So it was a law, and the law cannot be changed. You recall that? Or rescinded. Remember all that? Then why am I telling you? Okay, good. So chapter 4. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, chapter 4, verse 1 says, Mordecai rent his clothes. That doesn't mean he led them to others for money. What it means is he tore them. A sign of, well, grief is the idea there. He rent his clothes, put on sackcloth with ashes, and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and a bitter voice. Or a loud and a bitter cry. And he came even before the king's gate. For none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. That's where he was supposed to work. But he only would come to the gate. He wouldn't go sit inside the gate because you can't enter in sackcloth and ashes. You have to be dressed right. So he came even before the king's gate. For none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. Mordecai, we read in verses 1 through 3, Mordecai realizes that this law went forth. And notice what he does. He immediately weeps. He immediately tears his clothing, the grief. Places himself in sackcloth and ashes. We're normally used to seeing when the Jewish people would put on sackcloth and ashes, they would also pray and fast. But remember, because here the Jews are out of God's will, whether they prayed or not, we don't know, but this we do know. It's not mentioned anywhere in the book of Esther. They should be back in the promised land, and they're not. And now there's trouble. Mordecai is very upset. Why? Well, that's easy one. That's easy one. Because he basically knows that this is his doing. Are you with me? Why are all the Jews going to be put to death? Now just think about it. This is just chapter 4, so it's not like this book is that long. Why are all the Jews going to be put to death? Because Mordecai would not bow down to Haman. Remember that? So it's his fault, and he realizes that. He knows it. Mordecai recognizes that this is not normally what King Xerxes would have done. This decree is not what the king would have done himself. He realizes this is his fault now that the Jews are under the sentence of death. He mourns in sackcloth and ashes, crying, it says, publicly, weeping and walking around in sackcloth and ashes publicly. And everywhere the Jews heard the news, it was the same response with them, mourning in sackcloth and ashes. And I'm going to guess, even though it's not written here, that some of them would pray, because that's normally what the case was. Fasting and praying, they would be. It's all Mordecai's fault, and he knows it. He wouldn't bow, so now all the Jews will be exterminated. You know, some of the historians, the biblical historians, believe that there may have been somewhere between 9 and 12 million Jews living in the Babylonian kingdom. Or in the, let me rephrase it, in the Medo-Persian kingdom. Did you hear that number? Between somewhere between 9 and 12 million, and they are all scheduled to die. And it's because Mordecai would not bow down to Haman. He refused to bow down, so the entire race of his people are to be exterminated. So, Esther's maids, verse 4, and her chamberlains came and told it to her. Told her what? Well, it looks like what they told her is your cousin, there's something desperately wrong. He's not coming to work. He's out there crying publicly, and he's wearing sackcloth and ash. So they told the queen. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved. In other words, she was embarrassed. And she sent raiment or clothes to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he did not receive it. Then called Esther for Hatach, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatach went forth to Mordecai into the street of the city, which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And also gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go into the king to make supplication to him, and to make request before him for her people. And Hatach came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Now this is interesting, I think. This is a great movie. You know, I mean, if somebody would make this right, this is full of suspense. We're going to have death. We're going to have grief and sorrow. Little humor coming up. Do you see how protected Esther is? She is so protected inside this palace. She doesn't get out much, poor girl. And so, see, she's living in the palace with the king. She lives in the girl's part, but she lives in the palace with the king. She's the queen. She eats well. She dresses well. Life is just great. So she gets news that her cousin Mordecai is out there and he's crying. He spends his days crying, weeping publicly, and he's in sackcloth and ashes. And she's embarrassed. She's thinking, I wonder if this guy has lost his mind. What's wrong with him? Do you notice she has no idea of the law that went out? She's living in Sion where everything's roses and rainbows. She does not know that there was a decree to kill all the Jews on the 13th day of the last month of the year. She doesn't know. And so she's embarrassed for her cousin and the way he's acting. She sends him some clothes to wear. You know, Mordecai, you know, you're embarrassing the queen. So she's saying, here, put on this nice suit and get to work. What's with you? She then calls Hatach in and says this. Go and find out what's wrong. You know, this is not like him. And so you need to go see what's bothering the old guy. He's getting old. Maybe I just wonder what's up with him. Find out. I don't understand what he's doing and what's going on. So Mordecai, when Hatach comes along, Mordecai says, the edict has gone forth. To kill every Jew. I'm a Jew. To kill every Jew. And it's on the 13th day of the 12th month. And the law cannot be rescinded or changed. We're in deep trouble. So he even took a copy of the law, of the writing, and he gave it to Hatach and said, you need to show this to Esther, and you need to tell her. Esther, go into the king and tell him, you got to stop this. I mean, you're in a position where you can talk to the king. None of us can. Go in there and you got to stop it. He urges her, go directly to the king and plead for the people. Beg for their lives, basically, is what he's telling her. Verse 10. So after she gets all that news, here she reads the law, And now she hears the news, all the Jews are going to be killed, every one of them, and all of the entire kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Hatak came and he told Esther the words of Mordecai. Your cousin said, you're going to be put to death, all Jews. And so you have to go before the king. You got to plead for your people. You got to say something. All right, now what does Hatak know? What does he know? Mordecai says, I'm a Jew. I'm going to be killed. What does Hatak know? He's a mathematician. He can do two and two. What does he know now? Queen Esther is his cousin. Well, if they're cousins and one of them's a Jew. Now, it doesn't look like he's saying much, but now he knows something here. Interesting. And Esther spoke to Hatak and gave him commandment. You got to go back and talk to Mordecai. And here's what I want you to tell him. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces, all those do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king, into the inner court, who is not invited, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come into the king for a month. Esther sends a message back to her cousin, Mordecai, who, remember, is like a father to her. He raised her. And here's her message. I am so sorry. I had no idea this law went forth. What a dumb law. I don't understand what this is all about. This is just not like the king. But listen, Mordecai, there is nothing I can do about it. Don't you understand? I haven't been around the king for the last month. He hasn't invited me to come in for the last month. You know, everybody knows. If a person attempts to enter into the presence of the king and they're not invited, they are immediately, that means right now, put to death. Execution is the punishment for coming in before the king without an invitation. Don't forget, this king is known for his violent temper. And when he gets mad, not too much stands in his way. Remember Queen Vashti. He's a little embarrassed. He's angry. Remember, she was no longer queen instantly. And so Esther says, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do, but this, I do know this. I can't see the king. I haven't been invited into the king, into the main chambers there, where the king would sit in authority and judgment. I haven't been invited for a month. So it's not going to be me. Christian, you know, I hope that while we're learning the story, I don't have to stop and continue to go back and tell you how this relates to every one of us being able to go into the presence of the king. I'm sure that probably you see that for yourself. And, you know, he holds out the scepter to us because of Jesus Christ and him crucified and risen from the dead. I know that you know that, so I don't even have to say that, right? We'll just save that time. Okay. Verse 12. They told Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai, verse 13, commanded to answer Esther. All right, got a message to send back to her. There's no cuss words in it. But you know he felt that way. He says this. This is kind of a stern. It is a loving rebuke to the queen. Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. Let's say it in English. Esther, you're a Jew and all the Jews die. You know this king. Remember Vashti. Queen one minute, not queen the next minute. This guy's capable. Don't think you're going to get out of this just because now you live in the palace. You're a Jew and now they know you're related to me. And now they know I'm a Jew. Well, for if you, verse 14, altogether hold your peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from some place else, from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knows whether thou art come to this kingdom for such a time as this? When Mordecai gets her message, and her message says, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry this law went out, but there's nothing excuse me, I can do. I can't enter into the presence of the king. I'll die. So, sorry. And then Mordecai answers, this decree, Esther, my little friend, is to slay all the Jews. Don't think for one moment that you're going to get past this. You will die too. In other words, you're included whether you chose to be or not. You're a Jew. Just because you happen to be queen will not mean a thing. Don't forget Vashti. And then he says something that shows us, I believe it shows us, that he really believes God's promises. So Esther, if you don't speak up, I believe God will deliver us some other way. Because God has promised to take care of his people, even when they're in rebellion. God has promised that he would not allow all Jews to be destroyed. He promised that there would be a remnant always, and that they would live for eternity. So he promised it. And so here's what Mordecai say. In faith, I know that the Lord's going to keep his word. If you don't speak, I believe that God will deliver some other way, but you will die and your family will be destroyed. I like it. If you refuse to speak on behalf of God's people, deliverance will still come. The Lord will keep his promise. You see, Mordecai, I like him better every chapter. He's a man of faith, really. He just had a lapse back there when he should have gone. He should have headed west, and he stayed in the east. It's costing him dearly now. But he's a man of faith. But then he comes out and he says, but Esther, you know something? This is no coincidence. By that I mean, he says, for such a time as this, this is no coincidence. It's no coincidence, Esther, that you live where you live. You didn't turn out to be the most beautiful by accident. You didn't turn out to really impress the king by accident. This is not all coincidence. It's not all just evolution. In other words, he's saying, the Lord had a hand in this. The people will be delivered if you don't speak up. But listen, the Lord has a hand in this. Look back at your life, Esther. Just look back at your life and look at all that's happened to you. You know, you think about that in your own life. Look at all that's happened to you. You're here today in this northern part of the world. But many of you have a long story to tell how you got here and all the things that happened in between. Coincidentally, we all ended up in the same place. But the truth is it really a coincidence? Is it really? Maybe you too are here for such a time as this. He says to Esther, look at your life. You know, your parents died. You could have been raised in a different household, and you could be back in Jerusalem right now. You could be back over there. A lot of things could have happened to you. Esther, you're not in the palace on purpose, or I mean by accident. You're in the palace on purpose. All that the Lord has done you, now he's gotten you into the place that you need to be for such a time as this. Now's your time, Esther. We didn't know it last week, but every one of us can see it now, Esther. We're counting on you. You are in the place where something can be done. None of us are. All the rest of the Jews are outside that palace. He says, let's say it again. Esther, there's a reason that you're here. There's a reason you're in the palace. You just have to think about it. Now think about this. Joseph lived his life, most of his life, in Egypt. Coincidentally, it just so turned out that he saved the entire nation of Israel. Oh, it wasn't millions of people, no. 70 or around 70. But don't you find that amazing? that he suffered and was hated and mistreated, and he could have really been, he could have been on some big drugs for depression. Praise God that he wasn't, because when the time came for such a time as this, Joseph was ready, wasn't he? And he saved the nation of Israel. Never dreamed he was going to do that. He dreamed a lot of things, but never dreamed that one. For such a time as this, the Lord took Abraham to the promised land, out of Ur of the Chaldees. What for? For such a time as this. It's what the Bible teaches us. The Lord anointed David at about 14 to 15 years old to be king. What for? For such a time as this. The Lord raised up Moses. He was drawn out of the water. His parents set him afloat. His mama set him afloat. His sister kind of snuck around and followed him. He was drawn out of the water by Pharaoh's daughter. What a coincidence that was. And trained up and raised in Pharaoh's house. What for? For such a time as this, when the children of Israel would leave Egypt and the Lord would use Moses to lead them. You know, the Lord raised up John the Baptist, and he grew up a little strange. He was a social misfit. He ate a little differently than most of the Jews, if you'd like to check the Bible. He dressed a little differently than most of the Jews, certainly differently than the religious Jews. And God raised up John the Baptist. What for? For such a time as this, to prepare the way for Messiah. The Lord brought Saul of Tarsus, took him on up to Damascus, met him right before he got into town. What for? For such a time as this, that he might reach the Gentiles with the gospel. And that includes all of us, or most of us. And he says to Esther, the Lord has you right where he has you for a reason. Now that's true of Esther, and it's true of Moses, and it's true of Joseph, and David, and Abraham, and Isaac, and Ezekiel, and Jeremiah, and Peter, and James, and John, and Jude, and Tabitha. Then it's got to be true for you. Why would you be the only one who belongs to the Lord left out of the plan? You wouldn't be. Do you get it? So just like Esther, sometimes maybe you and I need just a little bit of a rebuke. Hey, don't think you're going to get out of this. God has you here to carry your weight, to carry your part of the responsibility. Esther, if you remain silent, I believe the Lord will still deliver. But you will suffer in the process. But you're put there for such a time as this. Here's your time. Take a shot at it, Esther. Here's Esther's response. They're passing notes back and forth. Because remember, he can't come in. He's in sackcloth. He can't. So, then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Verse 15. Verse 16 says, go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, all the ones in the city, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. And I also and my maidens will fast likewise. And so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I die, I die. I think that his message struck her heart. I mean, she knew he was right. You know, the truth is, I am Jewish. And the truth is, those are my people. That is my God. My God will keep his word. I believe there will be deliverance, but he has placed, I'm here. I have an opportunity because I'm here right now. I can speak up. So I'll do it, but you got to do this for me. Gather together all the Jews that are here in Shushan, in the area here. Let's get all of them together and fast with me. Fast. Don't eat or drink anything for 3 days. And my maidens and I will do the same thing. And after the 3 days, I'll break the law. I'll go ahead and break the law. I'll do it. I'll go directly into the king. And if I die, I die. Now, you know, that's easy to say. That's courage right here. This is faith and this is courage. If I perish, then I perish. In other words, she's saying, I know the penalty. And I know it's the law. They're not going to change or rescind the law. Therefore, I'll go in and I will break the law. If I die, then I die. Here's the bottom line. She has determined now, as she fasted and prayed, as she's ready, she is determined in her heart that she must help her people, that she must at least speak up, even if it means her own death. And so, by the way, this is a courageous woman. And I don't see this as an attitude. What I don't see what she says here is an attitude of, I give up. Well, there's no hope. I might as well just kiss the world goodbye. Goodbye, cruel world. You know, I don't see that. I see it's an attitude that's something totally different than fatalistic. Well, I guess we all got to die somehow. Let's go. No, that's not what you hear and that's not what you see. What you see is a willing submission to the place where God has you. Willingly submitted in the place where God has placed you. Even though it's not going to be comfortable, it could even bring more trouble, but trusting God in faith. Romans 8:31. I know you know it. Romans 8:31. Paul says, what shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? She's going to trust God in faith. And if I die, I die. Hey, remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel chapter 3? That's exactly what they said. We don't know what God's going to do. If we die, we die. And so if we do die, you need to know that we will not serve your gods. If we perish, we perish. That's up to the Lord. Well, here we go. Chapter 5. Came to pass on the third day, after 3 days, Esther put on her royal apparel, stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house. And it was so when the king saw Esther, see, she entered in. When the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king to her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? What is thy request? It shall be given thee to half of the kingdom. And Esther answered, if it seem good to the king, let the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I have prepared for him. After 3 days. Remember the first time Esther went in, she was such a beauty. They didn't need to dress her up and all this, the finest that they had. Remember, they did that to all the other girls. But Esther, they just put some stuff on her. She went before the king and she was the most beautiful. Well, now, she's not taking any chances. She fasted 3 days and it says she put on the finest that she had, took a deep breath, entered in before the king. Here goes nothing. The king was pleased to see her, held out the golden scepter. Whew, no death penalty for Esther. Matter of fact, he was happy to see her. And it says, the Bible says here, the king could tell something was on her mind. Obviously, she entered in without being called. Something's up. Maybe something's bothering her. I don't know what it is. So he says to her, what is it, Esther? What do you want? What do you need? What's going on? I'll give you up to half my kingdom. Basically, what he's saying there is, I can see something's up. Anything you want, you got it. What is it? I don't know why she didn't just tell him. Except maybe she knew him better than us. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe she thought, you know what? Just talking to him. This isn't the time. There's a better time. So she says, not here. Come to a banquet that I've prepared today. We'll have dinner. And bring Haman with you. You might as well bring the prime minister along, you know, since he's the second guy in command. Bring him with you. So verse 5 says, then the king said, cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther has said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said to Esther at the banquet, okay, they're having wine, they're eating, you know, it's an all-you-can-eat kind of thing. What is your petition? And it shall be granted you. What is your request? Even to half the kingdom, it shall be performed. You got it. Just tell me what it is. Then Esther said, my petition and my request is, and you can almost see her stop. She goes, if I found favor in your sight of the king, if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king has said. What's your request? I mean, we wanted us to have dinner. We're having dinner, and Haman and I are here. It's cool. This is a great dinner. Hey, thanks. Anything you want, you got it. What is it? Not today. Could you come back tomorrow? I'll prepare a banquet tomorrow. Why is she saying that? I already know, but I'm not sure she knows. I already know because I've read the next chapter, but I'm not sure she knows. You know how sometimes someone will say to you, why don't you just go ahead and tell her? Why don't you just tell him? And you go, well, I don't know. Are you afraid? Well, no, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't right. I don't know. I'll tell him tomorrow. I can tell you right now, I'll cheat and tell you, I've read on in. It's the Lord. So the Lord's going to do something in the king's heart tonight, before the dinner tomorrow. And so, however it worked, she just said, you know what? You give me anything? Yeah. Okay, then here's my request. Come to dinner tomorrow too, and bring Haman with you. And then I'll let you know tomorrow what I want. You know, I guess we have to tune in tomorrow to see what's going to happen. She might be giving Haman, I don't know what she's thinking. Maybe she's giving Haman more rope. There's an old saying, you give a person enough rope, they either climb it or hang themselves with it. Maybe she's doing that. I'm not sure, but this I know. It's the Lord. Whether she realizes that or not, it's the Lord. So verse 9. Then when Haman forth, okay, they had their meal, had some wine, great, now he's headed home. Haman, verse 9, went forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. That little Jewish guy still won't even recognize I'm somebody, won't bow. Now he's not even acknowledging me at all. He makes me mad. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. When he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him among the princes and the servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king to the banquet that she had prepared except me. And tomorrow I'm invited to go back for dinner with the king too. Now look at this attitude. Yet, you know what? All this availeth me nothing. You know, I've got everything. I'm rich, got a big family, got everything going for me. I had dinner with the king and his wife. And I'm invited to have dinner back tomorrow. Nobody else was invited, just me and the king. But he says, you know what? It's not enough. Doesn't avail me anything. As long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. That little Jew bugs me. I hate him. I've got everything anybody could ever want, but you know what? I'm not happy because that guy bugs me. Now, Christian, we hear that. We hear our own hearts talking now, don't we? It's not like you're reading through the book of Ruth anymore. It's like you're reading through your diary. Man, I belong to the Lord. He's good. He's blessed me. But you know what? I can't stand, oh, what's his name? I like to wish him a 5-car accident. In love, of course. Calls his family together. Boasts about everything he's got. His position. His money. I guess that makes him feel better. But that little Jewish man still will not bow to me. And he's still sitting in position at the king's gate. That guy bugs me. I hate him. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and his friends who were there, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak to the king, that Mordecai be hanged thereon. Then you can go merrily in with the king to the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be built, to be made. His wife and his friends listening to him complain, you know, I've got everything great, family, I've got money, I've got power, I'm eating with the king today, I'm eating with him tomorrow, this is great, but you know, one thing is just bugging me, makes all of this like nothing. That Jewish guy, I don't like him. So his wife and his friends, great wife he's got going on here, and great friends, he suggests this, hey, build a gallows, just have them start today, just build a gallows, 50 cubits, and then hang Mordecai on it. Get permission, the king's permission to hang him. He's a Jew. They're going to be killed anyway. Hang the guy. By the way, make it 50 cubits. Everybody will see him. That'll make you feel much better, Haman. That'll make you feel much better. 50 cubits, by the way, that's 75 feet high. That's high. You could see that from all around. Old Haman hanging there. From all around. Little Mordecai hanging from the gallows. Then they say this, great family and friends. Then they say, then after you hang the guy, you leave him hanging there. Then you can go and really enjoy yourself at the banquet with you and the king. That'd be great. Probably it's a sick bunch, but anyway. Chapter 6 says this. And that night, the king couldn't sleep. Coincidence, huh? And he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles. They were read before the king. That makes perfect sense to me. You really want to get drowsy? Read something like, and then on day 3, then we washed the car, and then on day, you know, boom. You know, a lot of people, when they can't sleep, they try to read, because reading makes them drowsy. Go sleep. So he says, bring in the Chronicles, bring in the diary thing, and read that to me, and that'll probably knock me right out. I can't sleep. So they bring him in, and they read it. And it was found written, well, here's a coincidence for you. Found written that Mordecai had told of Bignatha and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains and the keepers of the door, who sought to lay a hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, what honor and dignity had been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered to him, nothing's been done. Now, how about that for just great timing? I mean, if a producer or director was writing this movie, I hope they would have thought of this is great stuff. Because tomorrow the queen's going to tell him, I'm a Jew. And, you know, Mordecai is a Jew. And there's a law out that kill all the Jews. And I want you to know I'm a Jew and they're my people. And I don't know what to do. And so she's ready. She's going to tell him now. Haman wants to hang Mordecai. So he can eat better at the dinner. And that night, the king just so happens he can't sleep. And he's tossing and turning. He finally gets up. And, of course, the king can't sleep. Everybody has to get up. Get up. I'll tell you what. Bring the chronicle. Bring the log book out. And let's just read through that thing. And you just go back and start reading. I don't know. Pick a time. Open it in the middle and point and start reading. Let's just, maybe that'll help me go to sleep. And what a coincidence that they read the part when the king was going to be assassinated. Do you remember way back there when the king was going to be assassinated? Mordecai overheard it because he was working there. He overheard some of the guys at the gate, and he let it be known to the king. And those people were judged and found guilty and put to death. And he saved the king's life. And remember how we were talking about, and he didn't even get a thank you. Remember that? He not even a hey, you know, slapping right off. Thanks, buddy. Thanks. And maybe Mordecai, kind of like you and I, walked off going, and he didn't even say, I saved the guy's life. And what does he do? Man, not even a thank you. What kind of guy is this? It's so good that he didn't even get as much as a thank you, isn't it? The king said, that's right. I remember that now. Mordecai. Yeah, he sits at the gate there, that judge. Hey, what did we do to reward him? They look in the record and say, nothing. We didn't do anything. And the king's got to be, oh my goodness, then that's rude. Nothing? No, nothing's recorded. We didn't do anything. And the king's thinking, that ain't right. You know what? We need to reward this guy. He saved my life. Nothing for his loyalty. Nothing he got back there. And the king said, verse 4, who's in the court? See, he's been up most of the night. Now they've been reading. He couldn't sleep. Daylight, sun's coming up. Who's in the court? Verse 4. Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak to the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Well, it just so happens that Haman's there. Wants to speak to the king, wants to wait till he gets up, doesn't know he's up. So he gets to the court a little early, waiting, maybe I'll get to the king early, ask him to hang Mordecai. I got the gallows guard. We'll do it. Man, we'll have a great dinner later. And the king's servant said, and behold, Haman's standing out there in the court. King said, let him come in. Oh, great. Hey, the prime minister, that's perfect. So Haman came in. And the king said, what shall be done to the man who the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom the king delights, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? Oh, Lord, you can see where this is going. Early in the morning, Haman gets up. He probably didn't sleep well either. I'm going to get that little Jew. We're going to hang him high. And everybody's going to see him hanging. So he gets there early thinking, all right, man, first thing, I want to see the king first thing whenever he's up. So he gets in court a little early. Well, the king hasn't been asleep all night. They've been reading the Chronicles. They get to the part where Mordecai saves his life. And the king says, what do we do? Nothing. We did nothing. You know what? That's wrong. We have to do something. You know what? Is anybody out there in the court? Let's bring in some of the advisors. Well, the prime minister he just got out there. Great. Perfect. That's the right guy. The prime minister. Bring him in. He's the one. That would be great. What should we do, Haman? What should we do to honor? And I want to honor a guy. What should we do to him? And what does Haman think? Boy, the king really likes me. He wants to honor me. Okay, I better think about this hard now. I better make sure I say the right thing since I'm setting it up for myself. Isn't that cool? He wants to honor. I'm flattered. Can you imagine? He wants to honor me. I better think of something really good. Let's see. What do I want? Haman answered the king, said, for the man whom the king delights to honor, I'd say this. Let the royal clothing be brought, which the king uses to wear, and the horse that the king rides on, and the crown royal, which is set upon his head. Let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal with the king, whom the king delights to honor, and bring him on horseback through the streets of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Oh, great. He goes, oh, man, he probably wants to honor me. I don't know. I know. Here's what you should do, king. That man should be honored highly indeed. Here's how you should do it. He should look like royalty. You want to bless him and just honor him? Make him look like you. You should let him wear one of your robes. You know, one of the ones you're not wearing today? Put a robe on him. Like he were the king for a day. That would be great. You should let him come into town riding your noble steed, just like he's king for a day. And I mean, that would bring him honor. And all the people would go, wow, look at that guy. The king really likes that guy. He should come into town riding the horse, and he should be served by one of your most noble leaders. Oh. The king said to Haman, make haste to take the apparel and the horse, as you have said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sits at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that you have spoken. Can you? Oh, don't you wish you would have seen it? Just his face. Because the king basically says, perfect. Man, I couldn't have thought of something better. I said, perfect. You take the royal clothing. You take the horse. Take it to Mordecai the Jew. And you lead him. You're the prime minister. What better? Perfect. You lead him through town, proclaiming that this is the man. I want you yelling out to everyone. This is the man that the king wants to honor, that the king wants to thank. Great idea, Haman. Go for it. Oh. How embarrassing for Haman. Look at what God has done. By simple trust and simple faith, look at what God has done. God's going to deliver his people and get rid of Haman too. Oh boy. Verse 11. Then Haman took the apparel, took the clothing, took the horse, and he dressed Mordecai. Can you imagine how he was humiliated? And he brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and he proclaimed before him, as he's leading this horse through the city with Mordecai riding, looking like a king, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Mordecai came to the king's gate, but Haman, after he brought him to the king's gate, hurried home, mourning and having his head covered. He's hiding himself, hiding his face. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had happened or befallen him. Then said his wise men and his wife to him, if Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. While they were yet talking with him, the king's chamberlains came and hasted to bring Haman to the banquet that Queen Esther had prepared. He forgot about that. What a bummer. In complete humility, not humbling himself, but let me use another word, completely humiliated, Haman goes home. He dresses Mordecai in kingly robes, drives him through the streets, proclaiming how great he is. So humiliated, he runs home and hides himself, covers his head, so embarrassed he wouldn't show his face. And notice here, with a faithful bunch of friends and a faithful little wife he's got. They're the ones that said, hang him high, didn't they? Wasn't that their advice? Build a 50 cubits, make the thing huge, and hang the man, for crying out, and then go have a nice dinner. You'll feel better. Here's what his wife says and his friends. Basically, I told you so. You shouldn't be messing with the Jew. You shouldn't have messed with this little Jewish guy. Hey, she's the one that suggested. She's great. What a great family and friends this guy's got. Here's what they're basically saying. In our language, you know what they're saying? He's already beat you. And they even suggested this might be one of his last days. See what they say? You shall surely fall before him. You're going to die. You know, tomorrow may be your last day, buddy. Well, that's great family and friends. You told me, but you said. Yeah. You notice, and I could read you a bunch of Proverbs, and I know I could read you a bunch of Psalms, but the idea is there. Go look them up. The idea is this. No plans formed against you and no weapon that's formed against you will prosper. What God says in Isaiah. And of course, we read in Romans chapter 8, if God be for us, who can be against us? We can always trust our Lord. Notice that? Even though you're right in the midst of a situation where you are under the death penalty, still the Lord moves on behalf of his people. Then the news comes to Haman. Oh, man, the king's chamberlains are here. It's time to go to the banquet. You better get dressed and put on a happy face because it's time to dine with the king and queen. You know, the queen. You know, Mordecai's cousin. Oh, man. I don't know, but Haman should have probably said, you know, I'm sick and I can't go there. He's going to go. Notice how the Lord works in mysterious ways. Notice how we try to do it in the flesh. When God says he's going to keep his promise, we oftentimes try to help him. Okay, well then I'll figure it out, Lord, and I'll get back to you. And here's what we'll do. Abraham and Sarah. Well, God said, I'm going to have a son. It's going to be my son. And Sarah goes, okay, well, here's how we'll do it. Here's a good way to do it. I'll give you Hagar. Well, God says, well, it's not that Ishmael's ugly. It's just that, no, Isaac's going to be the one. So we try to do it in the flesh. In this particular case, they were wise, weren't they? How do you know what God's got planned for you for such a time as this? Why are we here? Does he really work in the lives of people? You're watching, even though he's not mentioned. You're watching the hand of God keep his promises and protect his children. Do the very things that he promised he would. Has he changed? I say no, he has not changed. The Bible says he's not changed. So yeah, you and I might be in some real difficult circumstances. Sure. I mean, we may be even under the death penalty. Yet look at how God can move. Coincidentally, how it just so happened that that night the king couldn't sleep. Now, had Esther done anything earlier, it would have changed the whole scenario. It would change the whole drama. I think the lessons for us are clear. First, God works in the lives of his people. Second of all, we must remain in fellowship with the Lord by the power of the Holy Spirit. Always, at all times. Even under the sentence of death. Trusting God that he will keep his promise. Now, what are his promises to you? You ought to go through the Bible when you get a little time and see what God has promised you. You need to know. We need to know what he has promised to us. Because those are promises we can stand on. Those are promises we can claim. Those are things that we can count on. If the Lord said he will do it, he will do it. If the Lord said he will do this in your life and that, he will do it. You know, the Bible clearly says that those that belong to him, he will take care of everything that pertains to them. Everything that concerns you and I, he will see to it himself. So he's called in the Old Testament Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will see to it. The Lord our provider. We're going to leave Haman there at his house, and we'll take up at the banquet next time we get together. Let's pray.